This audio version of Weiss's Concise Trustee Handbook is brought to you by WeissConciseTrusteeHandbook.com. Be sure to also read the handbook for any info not included in the audio files. For private entertainment use only, the information presented in this audio file is published with the understanding that the author and publisher, jointly and severally, are not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional advice. All decisions made based on the following material are ultimately done at the sole discretion of the listener. Author and publisher, jointly and severally, assume no liability whatsoever. Visit WeissConciseTrusteeHandbook.com for amazing trust knowledge, and to eventually also learn about trust webs, IRS dealings, social security knowledge, court protection knowledge, operating with lawful money knowledge, and allodial title of property knowledge. Declaration of the Express Trust. The Declaration of Trust, see footnote 15, is the trust instrument that constitutes the trust. It has been noted in trust law that no technical expressions are required to create a valid declaration, so long as the words used make clear the settlor's intent to create the trust or confer a benefit of some sort that would be best carried out in the form of a trust. See footnote 16. A trust instrument doesn't necessarily need to be a declaration either, for a trust may be, and often is, formed out of a simple agreement or even a will. See footnote 17. But with an express trust, the declaration has been preferred since the beginnings of trusts under the common law of England, which otherwise shunned fictions of law. This is where careful attention to detail is most crucial, because in order to properly construe the intent of the settlor, the objects, property, and manner in which all is to be carried out must be set forth in unambiguous, precise language so as to particularly create the express trust. And where the intent of the settlor is unclear, under equity, interpretation is required to construe the intent of the parties, and the trust may be deemed invalid, depending on the degree of ambiguity. See footnote 18. However, when all is done properly, obviously, there can be no lawful impairment of the obligations of contract. See footnote 19. Moreover, the declaration, by its terms and provisions, serves to establish the entire contractual arrangement, including the identities and positions of the parties, the trust's name, jurisdiction, and situs, and all particulars of administration, all of which the courts of equity will fully support by the principle that equity compels performance. See footnote 20. The ultimate result is the creation of a bona fide legal entity. See footnote 21. With its own separate and distinct juridical personality. See footnote 22, with standing to sue and be sued. See footnote 23, and to function as a person in commerce by and through its trustees. The term natural person has been applied to express trusts by courts of equity because of its administration being carried out by men acting as natural persons. See footnote 24. Under this application, the trust's right of contract is alienable, whereas its creator's natural right of contract obviously is not. See footnote 25. The express trust nevertheless possesses, inter alia, the right to all enjoyments stemming from the contracts into which it enters, as well as all the obligations imposed under such contracts. The express trust possesses the ability to hold slash own property, engage in business transactions, and incur liabilities, including tax liabilities, as well as assume creditorship, including secured party status, like any other legal person. Footnote 24. A generally unknown fact is that there are several types of citizens now existing in America. The trustees of an express trust may seek protection under the constitutions as state citizens throughout the Union of States, a jurisdiction outside the scope of the 14th Amendment, which we will discuss in a later section. However, it should also be noted of all citizenship, 14th Amendment or otherwise, that jurisdiction over natural and artificial persons is distinguished without a fundamental difference. This stems, surprisingly, from the operation of in rem jurisdiction, which underlies all civil law. Though all courts are familiar with the action in personam against persons, it is the action in rem against things, which, though practiced only in maritime law, stealthily operates in every civil and criminal court. This principle is one of the least understood in its entirety. In REM, jurisdiction over a man or woman can only exist if the man or woman is a slave, e, property, or res, an object, in which case his or her disposition at law is no different than if he or he were a horse or other goods. See the Zong Gregson v. Gilbert, KB 1783. In nature, in REM, jurisdiction is exercised over men and women by their creator exclusively. Governments can therefore gain only a fictional in REM jurisdiction over men by creating various legal devices, personas, for those men to assume limited control of, e.g., citizen, taxpayer, driver, etc. Since the device is legal fiction, a falsehood made true by force of law, this persona is in fact a legal object, or res. Just as in theater, the persona, person, is separate from the man or woman playing the part. Therefore, there may be artificial persons, but not artificial men, natural persons, but not natural men. American Law and Procedure, Volume 13, The Word Person Defined. Gaius says, "De juris division, the divisions of law, immediately preceding his division of the law, then follows the condition hominum, meaning the condition or status of men." In the Institutes, de jura personarum precedes the expression, "All our civil law relates either to persons or to things or to actions." The words persona and personae did not have the meaning in the Roman which attaches to homo, the individual, or a man in the English. It had peculiar reference to artificial beings and the condition or status of individuals. Citations omitted, bold and italics emphasis added. In footnote 33, we get at the modern application and its implications. The word person, in its primitive and natural sense, signifies the mask with which actors, who played dramatic pieces in Rome and Greece, covered their heads. These pieces were played in public places and afterwards in such vast amphitheaters that it was impossible for a man to make himself heard by all the spectators and later by all judges. Recourse was had to art. The head of each actor was enveloped with a mask, the figure of which represented the part he was to play, and it was so contrived that the opening for the emission of his voice made the sounds clearer and more resounding. Vox Peronibat, when the name persona was given to the instrument or mask which facilitated the resounding of his legal voice. The name persona was afterwards applied to the part itself which the actor had undertaken to play, because the face of the mask was adopted to the age and character of him who was considered as speaking, and sometimes it was his own portrait. It is in this last sense of personage, or of the part which an individual plays, that the word persona is employed in jurisprudence, in opposition to the word man, homo. When we speak of a person, we only consider the state of the man, the part he plays in society, abstractly, without considering the individual. 1 Buff, INST, Note 1, bold and italics emphasis, and bracket information added. Logic follows that if the man plays no part in a society, then he has no personal attachment or obligation thereto. The trustees under a declaration of an express trust are only persons in the private sense because he is only a person once he has accepted the role offered to him by the settlor. Private persons may also pursue constitutional protection as natural persons, citizens within the meaning of Article 4, Section 2 of the Constitution, and may thereby claim entitlement to all the privileges and immunities of same. See generally Paul v. Virginia, 75 U.S. 168, 1868. Even though, in today's economic situation, the term citizen is presumed to signify the 14th Amendment citizen, the term cannot be applied to express trusts when administered properly. In contrast, corporations, as artificial persons, are citizens of the United States, within the meaning of the 14th Amendment per Santa Clara County v. Southern Pacific R. C.O. 118 U.S. 394, 396, 1886. Footnote 25. Man's right of contract is considered so fundamental that even under Roman law, in its system of domestic slavery, all men, citizen or not, with the exception of slaves, the only non-persons, retained this fundamental right ius genium. It is understood to derive from a man's creator, and therefore is unalienable, even with his own consent/waiver. Man's right of contract, logically, is held by him in trust to his creator as property which has been settled upon him, and thus can never be contracted away because such would invalidate the original contract itself. This audio file was brought to you by WiseConciseTrustyHandbook.com. Visit WiseConciseTrustyHandbook.com for amazing trust knowledge, and to eventually also learn about trust webs, IRS dealings, social security knowledge, court protection knowledge, how to operate with lawful money, and obtaining a lodial title of property.